evening, everyone. We are about to begin, so let us please all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, can we have the roll call, please?
Good evening, Commissioners. I'll take the roll call. Chair Hartwig.
Present.
Vice Chair Hurd.
Present.
Commissioner Castillo.
Present.
Commissioner Griggs Murphy.
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery.
Present.
And Commissioner Griffith, I understand, is excused.
Yes.
And Commissioner Jung Lee.
Present.
Thank you.
Do we have a motion for approval of last meeting's minutes?
Move to approve. Move to approve.
It's been moved.
I second.
And seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? Abstentions? Good. Carries on. Looking for old or unfinished business.
There
I
is
believe
none.
There is none. Yes, indeed. Okay. Now, item five, modifications to the agenda. I believe we will make one modification to the agenda, and we are going to move recognition of people wishing to address the commission up to right now.
Sure.
We have one speaker card here for-
I see a second coming up, so there-
Pardon?
There's a second coming up.
Oh, there's a second coming up. Thank you. Okay, so we have Etta Johnson.
Yeah, if you can come up to the mic and just state your name. And you have 3 minutes.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Etta Johnson. I'm a community organizer of Oakland, been one for over 45 years. And I've also been a member with the OHA. I was a client of OHA. Recently, I went through a little situation with my apartment management, and they decided for me to get up out of there. And so the way they did it, it was in order to raise rent because I won the appeal. I put an appeal in also. And it was stated that I didn't come forward to bring the eviction in. Yes, I did. I brought it to Ms. Nervous, Vivian Nervous. Uh-huh. Yes, I did. Before Ms. Nervous retired, she took the paper, and then she called. She guided me to another worker because Ms. Vin David wasn't my worker. I was trying to reach Ms. Vin David at the time. And Ms. Vin David was retired also. Ms. Nervous is retired. But OHA felt that I don't know what they would have been doing, you know, mishandling their paperwork, and some wasn't handling it at all. Okay, because I had to bring a lot of things in. But I went through it, you know, knowing that I wasn't wrong off the top. I had no hesitation, no problem. I filed for an appeal immediately when it was granted. It was granted in the wrong way. The appeal, when they couldn't deal with me in the appeal because what they did was raise the rent. They wanted to raise the rent to market value to get me out. Never once was my rent behind. Never once was it late. And never once did I miss. I do a lot of community work in the neighborhoods. You know me. I don't know, you probably don't remember, but we do a lot of church events down the street at the Black Presbyterian. We go to the events with Keith Carson. Yes, and everything. I do a lot of work within the Oakland communities and have been, even though I'm disabled. I'm a disabled individual. And, yeah, I have very low esteem because I have very limited conditions. But I never give up. And I've been asked, and since I won the appeal and throughout the whole case, they had to take the appeal back and the eviction. The only reason they wanted me out was to raise the rent, just to get out to raise the rent. I am not the only individual in Oakland, California that's on your program that is going through situations like this. I work with different individuals, but when it came down to me, I have been stuck. And I cannot understand that, and I would like for the commission to review my case, to see what I presented, to see the situations of the living conditions that were not brought, the main things, the conditions were not taken care of at my building at all. And I was up under OHA, all right? But still and all, my rent was paid. I always paid my rent. I wrote letters. They didn't turn all of the stuff in. My landlord, it was very hard to get along with. It's a lot of people that have put in complaints with OHA from that unit. The conditions are not up. I've seen people die in there from unsafe living situations. I have pictures. I have documents. I can show you the living situations. I let you go into your own minds and decide where it went wrong and why would they even pull something like this to bring me out, and everything was met. Also, Adult Protective Services had to step in over this because of the living conditions, because I became ill behind the living conditions, and they was there from September until the end. So I am reaching out now to get that document and information to present to you all what was really going on. And I would like for you to decide. Do your own judgment. You're the commission. You're the people. You're all over housing. I mean, you make decisions for housing, am I right or wrong? I mean, because you're here meeting. And it's good that you have this commission. And it should be more community meetings for the people of Oakland with that's going through situations with Oakland housing so that things can be addressed before something like this. Never expected myself to be in here, but I'm here. I'm not mad. I'm just going to still push my way through. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson.
Well, I'd like to thank you for bringing this to our attention. You know, this is why we're here, to hear these kinds of stories and to make sure that the Housing Authority is following through properly. So we will take this under advisement, and thank you.
I appreciate it gratefully.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, let's see. We now have two more speaker cards. So we have Tonya DeLone. Is that right? Oh.
Good evening, Oakland Housing Authority commissioners and staff. My name is Tanya Love, and I actually work with Assemblymember Rob Bonta as a field representative. I'm here today to ask that this body consider reviewing the process in which the Oakland Housing Authority terminates assistance to residents, and to specifically consider reviewing Etta Johnson's appeal to reinstate her housing voucher, the appeal of which was denied in June of this year. Ms. Johnson came to our office early on in January feeling that the termination of her housing was unfair and asked if that she can get our help in getting the decision appealed, first with the landlords and now with the Housing Authority. Assemblymember Bonta wrote a letter asking the executive director to reconsider his decision. Mr. Johnson has stated that he would not do so, but also stated that the only recourse for Etta was to go to Superior Court. I have asked that some of the commissioners, if they can, review this case. I had asked him if commissioners can review the case, and he has stated that the commission has no legal authority. However, I have not been able to find written language in your public bylaws that corroborates this. I have asked a couple of commissioners, and to be transparent, that would be Ms. Castillo and Ms. Donna Murphy-Griggs, if they can confirm this information. They have confirmed verbally that this is true to their understanding. However, neither were at the time able to permit to explicitly give me language that explicitly states that the commission has no legal authority. to review the executive director's decision. And I believe Ms. Castillo has submitted a request of Mr. Johnson asking him to submit this language. My understanding of the process is that a housing client is served with notice that their housing voucher is in jeopardy of being revoked. They are then allowed an informal hearing, which includes housing authority staff, a hearing officer, which I am not clear if this hearing officer is truly independent, since I believe that they are appointed by the housing authority. And then after this hearing, they are allowed a review from the executive director. After this executive director, according to Mr. Johnson, makes this final decision, it seems that the only recourse that the person has is to go to court. However, the code that he presented to me via email, California Code of Civil Procedure 1094.6, states, Part A, judicial review of any decision of a local agency other than a school district, as term local agency is defined, or of any commission, board, officer, or agent thereof, may be had pursuant to section 10.945 of this code, only if the petition of writ mandate pursuant to such section is filed within time limits specified. And it goes on to say, if there is no provision for reconsideration of the decision, for a written decision or written findings, any applicable provision of any statute, charter, or rule for the purposes of this section, the decision is final on the date announced. It says, if there's no provision. I'm asking there to be provision made for reconsideration, and that it be made by this body. It seems fair to me that a final decision on whether or not a person is homeless should be made by an independent body of people versus one person. So I'm asking that you take this into consideration, that you consider reviewing, if I would really like you to review Etta Johnson's case, but I also would like you to review this process so that in the future, people who feel that they need other decision makers deciding on whether or not they lose their housing can get that opportunity. Thank you very much.
Yes, and thank you.
I also have the document that I read. I have copies of it. I have copies of a release of information from Etta Johnson allowing you to review this information. And I also have a copy of the email that Director Johnson sent to me saying that you have no legal authority. If you would like it, I can distribute it.
Okay, and I thank you very much for giving us this information. I will only add that the process of evictions and Section 8 vouchers and all of that is a very, very tightly regulated process by HUD. And so there are real limits as to what anyone from the outside can actually do on that, but you are quite right that we can review the process that is going on, and so we can make sure that we have the accurate process information, and we can look at that to see if the process appears to be fair. So I thank you.
And then if you do have language that explicitly states that you have no legal authority to review these decisions, please send that to me, because I know I'm not a lawyer, and I really didn't have time to read through the 500-page tome that you guys wrote. But if you can find that information and send that to me, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, well, I can certainly ask our legal counsel if she would have that information, because none of us up here are lawyers, and even if we were, we're not actively practicing in that area.
Okay, so, thank you.
Thank you. If it's like 10 seconds, okay, because 10 seconds, we have to keep
what
this.
I'm going to try to say is, when they was reviewing my case, the only thing they reviewed was the other side. They didn't review my documents. They didn't even bring my documents forward.
Okay, I think we understand that.
And so I would like
that.
For you
yes.
to have my documents also when you're doing this. It's not one-sided. You can never have a one-sided case.
Yes, I would agree with you.
To make a decision.
You.
Okay, so I would like for that to be, both sides to be included. We're making your recommendations. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to second your request to look into the process and any policies that we need to kind of review to make sure that this doesn't happen.
Right. We just want to know the process is fair and being administered fairly. Mm-hmm. That's yes. Really the bottom
yeah,
line.
Yeah, we'd be happy. We'll have General Counsel create a legal opinion for you on how we're governed by the Code of Federal Regulations. The governance is actually 24 CFR 982.552B3, and that's the federal code that we have to adhere to. So if you Google that, you'll find it. And so we'll get you the legal opinion, and then I think we're meeting on Friday, so hopefully I'll have it by then. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. And then we have one more speaker. Let's see. We have Regina. Is that Howard?
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. Hi. I'm Regina Howard, and I've been here a couple of times. I was here at the last meeting, but I had almost a nervous breakdown, so I left. Okay, I was here regarding the housing issues over at 361 49th Street. I was living there for 17 years with mildew and mold in my bedroom where I had to sleep in that. I couldn't sleep in my bedroom for 2 years. I slept on my couch. I was asked to move to 539 59th Street, apartment number one in Oakland. Okay, they requested that I'm disabled, live-in aid. They approved my live-in aid. It got denied because they said my daughter couldn't be my living aid. I asked for something in writing stating the law states that your daughter cannot be your living aid. I have not seen it. I've been making numerous phone calls, emails to Mark, Mr. Lee. I just emailed Mr. Johnson in regards to the situation going on there. I've been cleaning up plums since I've been there for 3 months. I cannot afford to do it. The plum tree over in the neighborhood has damaged. Plums are all on my car now. I'm cleaning up plums. I'm study buying stuff. The house where I moved to is smaller. Far as I'm concerned, they have disassembled my family. My family has literally not want to be there. So I'm there with a disability with no assistance from any of my children right now. I'm having breakdowns. I lost 40 pounds since my house flooded in December. Nobody seems to care about what's going on. They study playing games. I'm study waiting. I'm disabled. I need help. And somebody needs to look into these matters about people with disabilities because everybody's house that flooded at 39th Street got their house repaired except for me. I'm the only one that was requested to move, so I feel like I have been discriminated against. And something needs to be looked into from the bottom up to the top. I went to a hearing. They still deny my aid. I have no aid at my house to help me. They keep questioning my doctor for what? I don't know. He done made statements to them. What in the matter can y'all help me do? I need some help. I'm about to have a nervous breakdown. And that's the reason why the last time y'all had that meeting, they took me outside. They almost had to call the ambulance for me. I need some help. And I need to not be ignored.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much. So Eric, we can have someone look
and
into this.
I just
this
got
and
your email, I'll look in that living aid.
So you have her email,
and
we'll have a process, and we'll know what that process is, whatever
can y'all please,
we're going to do.
Please give me some help.
Yes.
That's probably the next time you see me, I might be dead.
Well, I certainly hope not.
I hope not either. But it seems like I'm swimming away from you. So can y'all please help me?
Okay, thank you again for informing us.
Okay, thank
yes,
you.
Thank you. Thank you, Director.
Okay. Okay, then having no more speaker cards, we will now move on to new business, item A.
Item A is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to take any and all actions necessary to acquire the interest in the limited partnership in Foothill Family Apartments LP for a purchase price of $650,000. This is our first buyback in all of our tax credit deals, so it's a bit historic, and I want to congratulate the Real Estate Development Department and Phil particularly for his negotiations through this. It's been about a year of negotiations, and I think we're getting quite a good settlement here, and I am thrilled to present that we will own the entire limited partnership at Foothill Family, which was a tax credit deal built in conjunction with Lion Creek Crossing Hope 6. It was a turnkey, meaning it was built and then turned over to us, and we've been having it, we've been watching it, and it's another one of our partners, our an affiliated nonprofit is OHI, is part of the managing general partner, and the chair sits on the board, as do I do, along with nine other members from the community. So I'm grateful to bring this forward. I know we've talked about it twice in closed session, and Phil's here with his team if you have any further questions.
So we're now solid on the 650, right?
We're solid on it.
Okay. Okay.
I'd like to move the item.
Excellent. Item has been moved.
I'll second.
It has been seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Any abstentions? We are going to take over Foothill Family Apartments.
Congratulations.
Lovely.
Hallelujah.
Okay.
Very good.
Item B.
Item B is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to execute 2-year contracts with 3 additional 1-year option terms with Casterline Associates PC, CSG Advisors Incorporated, and Innovative Financial Housing Solutions Incorporated for as-needed general financial services in a combined amount not to exceed $200,000 for the initial 2-year term and $100,000 for each subsequent 1-year option term if exercised. This was procured according to OHA rules. The evaluation committee actually awarded, recommended award of all three. The three firms have each a different kind of niche in financial advice that they thought we could benefit from as the years go by. Casterline is well known in the agency for doing operating subsidy, providing advice, and maximizing public housing operating subsyband capital fund, DDTF funds. So that will be a unique niche for them. Innovative Financial Housing Solutions is actually a different kind of consulting about it's the former CFO from the Atlanta Housing Authority, former executive director, and some other very informed staff, really on how we position ourselves in terms of us related to our nonprofits and how we can best maximize those approaches, I think would be a really interesting thing to have them look at. CGS Advisors is actually much more focused on real estate and real estate performance and development, and I think they can be very useful, particularly to Andreas and Mark Schifferl while they're going ahead with OPI and what we're going to do with those project-based Section 8 units should we decide to do any financing and development. I think that they would provide some unique views on that. So I'm recommending all three get on the list, and if we have work, we will use them.
Okay, so we're actually going with all three, not just Casterline?
No, we're establishing a list.
Casterline.
They're all on the list, yeah, and we won't spend more than between all three, which is kind of what we do with temp services. You know, we have an annual amount we don't exceed, but we may use multiple contracts and multiple vendors. It'll be the same thing, and we'll target which one we go to based on which one has the most expertise in the three areas I just talked about.
So Casterline Associates works with over 200 PHAs.
Yeah.
Are most of those large or small? Do they
My question is,
do they have experience working with large?
We actually PHAs? Have an enormous amount of experience with them. We contracted with them in late 2008 that went on for 5 years.
Okay.
Very, very fond of their skill and expertise. One of the things we want to have them look at, having just come off the budget, is actually our cost allocation plan and how we allocate costs across departments. The other thing we want them to do is look at our utilities as they're reported to public housing. We don't really have enough staff to do the work it takes to change those every year, but they will. So we can maybe get some more money out of the utilities enhancements for the public housing operating fund program using them. The thing I would tell you is Jason Casterline's been around forever, does trainings in addition to on-site consulting.
Are any of them here?
No, they're not. The only local firm is actually CGS Advisors. Innovative Housing, Financial Housing Solutions, although everybody works everywhere, the majority of their work is actually doesn't need, they don't need to be on site. So what happens usually with Casterline is they'll come on site for work for a period of time, but then they take everything and go back and then deliver the work. So they're not really here that much. They're here for the initial meetings and maybe a few days, and then they're out. What we really need is just someone we can email, talk to, and get advice. Okay. And one of the exercises with Innovative Financial Housing Solutions, I think, is going to have them look at how we're over that large table on how we structure ourselves that we do for the budget, and make sure, see if there's any ideas they have on how we could better position the agency.
Okay. So in reading this, I was really pleased to see that CGS is the nation's leading financial advisor.
They believe that.
That's very impressive.
They're a good group, and we have used them as well. One executive director in the Bay Area used to actually work for them years ago.
Okay, great. If there are no other questions, I'll move the item.
Thank you.
I'll second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? It is unanimous. We have consultants. Okay.
Thank
Item
you.
C.
Item C, consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the Alameda County participating counties, cities, agencies, collaborative to complete the Department of Housing and Urban Development assessment of fair housing tool and report, and to fund the authority's prorated proration of the fees for the AFH consultant. And I would like to call up Deputy Executive Director Patricia Wells, who is our lead with all of our counterparts in Alameda County and has honestly put this collaborative together, to give us a brief report.
Thank you, Executive Director. Executive Directors, I'll start off by saying that this is a very laudable effort from President Obama to try and collect data to establish the reasoning and the process that has been dealt with over the last 200 years to establish what can arguably be called systematic discrimination and inequity of housing. However, the administrative burden of doing this task is immense, and several of you might recall in different workshops that we've attended through NARO and CLAF and other organizations that a lot of jurisdictions fear having to put together this tool and plan because it requires data collection that's historic, going back roughly 40 years. It requires data collection from agencies not typically associated with housing, such as what we pay attention to, school districts, healthcare, environmental information, as well as government entities. And it also requires a significant amount of community input, which again is a good thing. It's the administrative burden. After 2 years of discussion nationally through all of the primary advocacy groups, HUD issued its final rule in 2015. It's such a complex endeavor that there are four types of methodology for the assessment, one for government entities, one for housing authorities singularly, one for regional entities, and one for those entities that are specifically funded by CDBG. HUD, however, realizing the complexity, established a methodology so that you could regionalize the effort. And so here in Alameda County, we took the initiative under Mr. Johnson's leadership and got together all the housing authorities and local city jurisdictions in Alameda County roughly about a year ago. We waited a little bit to see what would happen in the federal government administration to see if there was going to be a change in the law. However, we re-engaged the group about 3 months ago and put together 15 entities, including all of those in Alameda County funded under the home funding as well as CDBG. And we have now established what we have before you, an intergovernmental agreement of all those entities to, number one, share the cost of the consultant that we'll be bringing in to do the entire 2-year project. Two, to establish Alameda County, the government entity, as the lead, because they previously did the AI, the assessment of impediments to housing for the county, are very experienced with the fair housing law that this is based on, and have a pretty stealth procurement process. So they'll be doing the procurement. They'll act as lead for the 15 agencies, and the remainder of the 14 agencies will have a lead, such as myself, and I'll be working with Julie Christensen of our offices to work internally to help navigate the community meetings, the data collection, and the interaction of putting together the actual final tool. It's about a two-year project, very exciting. It incorporates a series of maps that overlay a lot of the different data fields that I spoke to, and it'll give us data that we'll be able to use for some of our other endeavors, including our healthcare impacts, our workforce development impacts, and our educational impacts. So the resulting data is going to be amazing. It's just going to be a huge endeavor. And I think we're lucky to have the 15 groups come together so quickly, buy into the fact that this is something that should be coordinated and work together with Alameda County as lead. This is an action item, so by approving it, Mr. Johnson will be able to sign on, and we can initiate, we hope, the issuance of the RFQ for the consultants sometime in October, November, with Alameda County taking lead. I should add that piece.
Thank you.
Okay, so one question.
Yeah.
So it says that, let's see, county and cities assume 65% share?
The percentage points that you see, while seemingly huge, keep in mind that we're estimating right now, based upon other cost of consultants, a total $100,000. So that 65% is based upon the demographics for each of the jurisdictions. Oakland Housing Authority is the largest of the five housing authorities, and the County of Alameda and City of Oakland are the two largest public entities. And so that's why the percentages are high. But it's very equitable, and we all bought into those roughly about 6 weeks ago.
Thank you.
And it does save us an enormous amount of doing it ourselves. Plus, I think we end up with a better product to base planning in the county on. We actually at one point had conversations about including Contra Costa County to even go larger, but that proved not to be on the same timeline, so we elected just to go with Alameda County. We always pay the most, and when we did the fair market rent study, it was same proportionality. Okay. We always pay the most because we have the most house families in the county.
All right, thank you for answering that.
What an incredible undertaking.
Yes.
It's amazing. Is this one of in the country?
Every HUD-funded program is required to complete this document, and what we see the trend to be nationally are regional groups coming together and collaborating to complete this task. As Eric mentioned, the deadline for many was this year. Uh-huh. We in Alameda County were fortunate enough for it to be pushed back for 2019, so we got to watch others take advantage of what they learned and the best practices that they established. And so we are off and running using a compilation of everything best we found in the nation. And we looked across the nation as we assessed this.
And all agencies and entities who's participating in this will be able to have access to the assessments, to the finished product.
Absolutely.
Even the public.
That's what I was going to say, because I knew that's what you were focused on. One of the amazing things that they did ask for was very comprehensive input, and so we'll have a series of town hall meetings, both as a entity, the Oakland Housing Authority, and in collaboration with the City of Oakland. So we're working very closely with the City of Oakland and the county. And I should mention, there is a steering group of the larger 15, and OHA is one of the five members of the steering group, as is the City of Alameda, the County of Alameda, and Alameda County itself. So you have kind of the core team leading the effort.
Okay, great.
It's massive. Yeah. How are you handling the liquid patterns of racially and ethnically concentrated areas of poverty? I mean, you guys are going broad, and it's a liquid environment. Even if you go back 40 years to when you're finished, it's changing right under your feet all the time. So how are you guys going to actually make it real time, or are you not even trying to do that?
One of the things that the regulation and the final rule establishes is the use of data already preset by HUD, which they've been working on over the last 2 years. We already have access to those data maps. We'll be using the last census And then the idea of using data from groups who have the shared clientele, for example, the counties, other subsidies mm-hmm. in housing, we compare that to the HUD census data. The liquidity of our populace, though, is very real, and we see that when we do the homeless count every other year. And so you kind of have to go with what data that you can verify, and this is about verification. I think what will happen is once we see that data and do two comparatives to the changes in policy, the changes in everything from the way mortgage loans were established as well as financing for other small businesses, that's when you'll get to see the picture.
Wow.
Sadly, I'm not sure we're going to be surprised. I think what we'll get is validation, and that's why we're kind of surprised with the effort itself, because then it'll give us real data that we can use for further studies, both as a housing authority as well as a collective. And the community will have access to it. That's one of the big requirements under the
Excellent.
Law.
Excellent. And my final question is, once you set this in place, will someone continue to monitor this so that it could be like something that we can have?
It'll be interesting to see. This is a law that's very much paid attention to by the White House, and the White House initially was...
the current administration.
Yes, the primary public housing unit in the United States is paying attention to it.
Okay.
And so it will be what happens from administration to administration.
Right.
But what I think we've talked about, Mr. Johnson and I, is that once we establish a baseline, then we have enough information to move forward. But okay. The Housing Authority is light years ahead of being creative to try to build equity into the way we do housing products. So mm-hmm. it will only get better.
Excellent. And which department in Alameda County is it going to be housed at?
Housing and Community Development.
Housing
Linda Gardner. Yeah.
Linda Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a lot on her plate.
She does.
She does. She's a busy department between the bond money and this.
Well,
this is, regrettably, I would say it's a wonderful idea that HUD has overregulated.
Yeah.
And they need to fix that.
Yes.
It shouldn't be so difficult for us to write a report in real time right. using our data to inform how we're going to make decisions. But they've turned it into massive amount of online tools and compliance. So, yes. And that was not the intent of the legislation. It was the statute. It's the intent only of the overregulation through the notice period with HUD.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Just one question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, this is great. I mean, I did my work on poverty at UC Berkeley in Mills, and so for me to see this, it's fascinating. So my question is, once this is approved, are we going to do a press release? How's the public going to get this information?
It actually goes all into our plans.
It
so it's yeah, it'll be part of that year's plan. We have to submit it to HUD. Mm-hmm. So we will bring it here along with the plan, and we'll have the way this is going to end up working for the multiple jurisdictions.
Okay.
The overall analysis and data will be there. We will then look at the ones, we will look at Oakland, and we will develop our own response and
okay.
that will be unique to OHA.
Okay.
And you know, I'm going to tell you now, some of it we're going to contradict. We're going to tell you our development policy is we're going to go into distressed neighborhoods and try and lift them up
okay.
and not just go into nice neighborhoods.
Thank you.
And we're going to try and, to your question, mm-hmm. my question and my criticism, and it was fairly loud to some HUD officials in several meetings last year, is if you're sitting and you're living in West Oakland and you know you're gentrifying around you, and you're telling me that I can't build there because you're seeing it as a distressed neighborhood when I know it's already flipped.
Yeah.
So how can you preclude, and I even said this to the head of the state tax allocation committee in a diatribe, and they pulled back. That was last November, and they actually did not include that because of my arguments about gentrification.
One of the concerns is that the resulting requirement for housing authorities and developers to only develop in neighborhoods of choice, which is a questionable phraseology, is that they'll be literally reversing and doing an equally harmful impact on the ability for folks to really have choice in housing.
Great.
Because wherever you build a house, you have to build the hospitals, the schools, and the nutrition
Great.
Outlets. So what this could turn into could be impactful. Yes. But I should mention in methodology that when we do the community meetings, we will have to do full outreach to invite all participants into the room
okay.
to have input. So through
Wonderful.
That method, there'll be media okay. coverage and,
okay.
and alerts to the community.
Wonderful. All right, thank you.
Now, I'm just thinking, it looks to me like this is going to have, this is, looks like a very big task. So I'm just wondering if we've looked at what are the impact on resources to OHA and what the actual real cost is of this, not the consultant cost.
The real cost is going to be staff time pulling the data
out of
our system. The majority of the data that they're going to base it on is actually in the HUD system.
Okay.
So it's already there. It's already online. You can pull it down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it's not really so much of a data gathering thing on the
part
of OHA.
It's the public meetings, the input that they're going to do, and we're not. That's why getting a contractor to do it regionally is actually what we have to do, because we couldn't. This would eat up a great deal of our staff time for a very long time.
So just to be clear, so the real goal of this then is just a couple words of what we're really, what we want the real output to be.
Well, the output for us is going to be. Will be the work that we have to do administratively, and at the end, our interpretation of how we want to focus our funds and
how efforts. We want to focus our funds.
It was really developed, and not to mince around words, it was developed because we have certain jurisdictions, namely Baltimore and Dallas being the two primary ones, that have real differences between the county and the city in terms of where Section 8's allowed and whether or not people can move there.
Mm-hmm.
And lawsuits with HUD because they refused to adhere to certain requirements HUD was putting on them. That's where this came from. And when they were doing the legislation, our congresswoman at office called to say, well, what does OHA think about it? Because she'd heard from some of our neighboring jurisdictions. I think they didn't necessarily like it. And my response is still hasn't changed, that there could be a great amount of good that could be accomplished throughout the country by doing what they were passing. And I think that we didn't comment either way on it. Mm-hmm. One is we have a very integrated city. We have a city that is divided by poverty lines.
Yes.
And we have a role to play on both sides of those lines.
Yes, we do.
But we didn't. That wasn't in the language.
Mm-hmm.
What has really come out of it is a 250-some-odd page rule.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you broke me, you know?
Yeah.
You had me until you issued a 250-page notice.
And 24 maps that
so
overlay.
So it needs to be simplified.
Thank you.
And the goal, so you know, is to force jurisdictions mm-hmm. that fail to recognize
yes.
racial income disparity
yes.
in the way they administer their programs
yes.
and force them to recognize that and put it how they're going to address it in a plan.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Amen.
Chair, I do have one more question.
So, yes, go right ahead.
If our part is $100,000, how much is this going to cost?
No, $100,000 total.
Total.
Oh,
right.
So
our
part.
Right.
Okay.
So our part will come in, we believe, somewhere short of $30,000.
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I see. So this is really to solve problems then that we might not necessarily have or have to the, I mean, we may have them, but we're working on them. We're not ignoring them.
Yeah, and we are a very limited geographic distribution.
Right.
So we have to play in a very small sandbox.
If yes, right.
If you're larger, if you have the county and city under your jurisdiction and the city's not allowing vouchers in the county and mm-hmm. that kind of thing, and you have a huge racial disparity like Baltimore County, Baltimore City,
yes,
then it's an issue.
Yes.
And Dallas was intentionally not approving projects in nicer neighborhoods that were
affordable
housing.
Oh, yes, yes.
And they
yes.
got sued.
Okay.
And HUD won.
Yes.
In terms of the collaboration, when you look at Alameda County and perhaps as we've had port conversations, there is then that impact of how Oakland can help to influence what happens in the greater county.
And keep in mind, this isn't just housing authorities at all. This is every HUD funding.
Program.
So it's CDBG, it's home funds, it's that whole decision-making process on funding streams we have no access to.
Right. Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Is this an action item?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Yes. So this is a, do we have a motion item?
I move to approve.
A second.
Move seconded. All those in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Abstentions? Carries.
Thank you, commissioners. Moving on to item D.
Consideration
of a resolution authorizing the executive director on behalf of the agency to write off $114,383.71 to tenant accounts receivable deemed to be uncollected for public housing tenants for the period January 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2017. This is your 6-month write-off account. We're now trying to come every 6 months.
Yeah.
so we stay more timely. The purpose of the write-off isn't forgiveness. They all get reported to HUD. What it actually is telling staff you can't pretend that you're going to have $114,000 that you can go out and spend because you're not going to be able to collect it.
Yeah.
It's a best practice recommendation from HUD that they get written out periodically, and I like to do it every quarter, every 6 months, so that we can track tenants. Mark Schifferl is here with Andreas Manriquez if we have any questions about any of the amounts. One of the things I did want to point out is that the average amount of delinquent family was only $1,759.75, which is pretty low compared to what it's been in the past, if you recall.
So this would represent then on
moving more timely
100 families.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, working with families differently and moving more families, you know, and keeping if they're not able to.
And this number is pretty stable over time.
It's actually dropping.
About a quarter million a year.
It's dropping, but it's dropped over the period of the past few years. We've gotten much better at collecting rent in real time, not letting families fall so far behind, and working with families who are illegal to get them back into compliance.
I mean, are there things that you see that could be done to lower this number, or is this really something that's really not within our control? Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You mean what?
Yeah, I mean, this is the tenant. This is the tenant rent, and these are in the public housing program.
Yeah,
and sometimes if they get evicted for nuisance, then it can go longer because the courts take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is to never evict someone. The goal is really to intervene with them and try and work them out so they can stay. And part of that is a modest loss, and this is not a huge loss compared to our budget if you think about it. So it's really just an investment in families who are in a state of crisis. We don't want to really evict anybody. We want them to come current with their rent and work with them.
Yes.
I would point out that you will see some large, if you see a large balance, it's usually an anomaly. It was usually an eviction for cause that went on for a very long time in the courts.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. All right. So are we going to vote on this? Or move it, I should say.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay.
I'll second.
Excellent. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Carries. Good. So now we're going to E. Kaboom.
Item E. Item E is an exciting, is the beginning of an exciting partnership. And I'm going to call up Patricia Wells, our Deputy Executive Director, who will give us a PowerPoint on an innovative partnership with Kaboom. We have partnered with them years ago at one of our developments called KHI, Keller Housing. And haven't done anything, and that was through the limited partnership, and OHA has never really done anything with them. And I'm thrilled that we have the design day behind us, and she's going to show you some pictures from last Thursday night. And now we're getting ready for the actual build day, which you are all invited to, and I thought you should learn about what it is and what it means, and also who our partners are, which I'm very proud of. Patricia?
Good evening, Commissioners. Our primary partner is Kaboom. Kaboom is a national nonprofit dedicated to bringing balance and active play into the daily lives of children. They focus in communities where children are identified as at risk, typically want those that are on subsidy, limited access to health care and nutrition. Kaboom has taken the stance that many of us already know, that active play encourages overall development both cognitively as well as physically. And Kaboom projects are not just about building the playground, it's about inspiring the community to come together. So they're often in communities that have divested themselves from being unified. So it's about bringing the community together, taking ownership for what's going on at the play area and often other community building activities blossom after a Kaboom build. This grant is for Lockwood Gardens. If you look in the aerial view, the red dots at the top are pointing to our small tot lot that is behind our district building. The arrows on the bottom are pointing to the playground space that we'll be talking about this evening. Considering the size of Lockwood Gardens, it's somewhat hurtful to realize that we have two primary play spaces for a community as large as Lockwood is.
Here you have another aerial view. If you look over in the lower left-hand corner, you can see the space where the playground was. You can see some yellow and some long space. And right across the street is 1327 65th Avenue, which you know as our East District Administrative Offices. One of the reasons I point that out is because I mentioned that a lot blossoms out of a Kaboom playground build. One of the things that our Family Community Partnerships Department is working on is to make sure that our after-school programs and youth programs that will be housed at 65th Avenue establish focused play activities for the children right across the street. I also wanted to show this view because Chief Duplessis, Andres Manrico's, Mark Schiffer, and his team are looking at ways to alleviate some of the vehicular stress patterns that kind of have vehicles going through the community much too quickly. So we're looking at this globally, and it's not just about the playground build.
Wonderful.
The Lockwood community is 81% African American, but we do have representation from other communities. When you look down at the chart down below, 206 of the occupants at Lockwood Gardens are babies under the age of 13. And so when you look at those two playgrounds, you can see that there is definitely a need to have focused active play in a location that then our FCP and community partners can supplement with activities. But we don't discount the 46 teens that are there at the community. So FCP, again, is looking at ways of focusing programs, much like our Explorers program, to get teens interested in being buddies and peer support to the children at the location. And lastly, talking about intergenerational possibilities, we're looking at how to help the 114 seniors living at the site somehow be connected to the playground and to the youth there. But one of the things we wanted to illustrate with this slide is that it is a diverse community, and it's full of babies with smiles.
That's great.
The chief actually provided this photograph from spring 2007 that shows you that the park is pretty actively used by kids ages on average 8 to 13. We're guessing by interactions with staff and community police officers there at the Lockwood location. However, the structure is 17 years old, and the typical lifespan for a playground structure is 15 years. If you were to see it up close, there's holes, there was a lot of rusting and dry rot, and the property management team and CID team had to often rehab it in order just to make it work. But it had exceeded its life structure. And you can kind of get a better view here when you look at not just the peeling paint, but the fact that the X's and O's, a couple of those O's are actually holes. They weren't really whole O's. So we decommissioned the structure on June 30th, tore it up, and put down a safety material to make it flat. That was just about the time we were notified that we were awarded the grant and that our partners are Disney Pixar. Last Thursday night, we hosted a design day. 56 youth, 18 months to 16 attended, 21 adults volunteered and did a whole evening of interaction with the Kaboom staff to identify everything from the colors that you see. The children drew pictures of their dream playground. And in the next slide, Commissioner Hurd, you'll note in the right-hand corner, they wanted a smoke-free playground.
Oh, wow.
And it resulted in 30 drawings of the children of their dream playground. We will have to contend with requests for swimming pools, a trampoline, basketball courts, and something that allows race cars, but we can do it. Three Pixar representatives attended the entire four-hour session and gave away goodie bags to the kids that had teddy bears and other Pixar memorabilia in it. Pixar will be funding, along with Disney, the build day, as well as the primary cost of the playground itself.
Wow.
Beautiful.
Our next steps are fundraising. As I mentioned, that this is a grant where they provide the primary funding for the physical structure, but it's up to OHA and our partner, the Oakland Housing Authority Foundation, to do fundraising to supplement everything from refreshments for the build day, as well as any other play activity that we like there at the site. So some of the ideas are already being generated by the design team, which includes 14 adults from the Lockwood Gardens community who will be taking leadership roles on the different committees. Park fences, interactive play games for the children there at the site, including things like hopscotch and twister painted into the concrete. The Housing Authority Foundation, led by our chair, Sergeant Casey Mooningham, has already contributed $8,500 to the build. So we've met our initial obligation, and now we're focused on fundraising for everything else for the actual build day. I mentioned the awesome size of our resident committee, and we have in the audience Dawn Pipkins.
Okay. Yes, Dawn.
She's our team lead for Family Community Partnership and has the awesome responsibility of keeping the residents energized and engaged. So wish her luck, and we're going to give her lots of energy to help keep them excited for our build. Right now, Disney Pixar is committing 200 volunteers of their own to help with the build day.
Wow.
The build day is a six-hour build. We start at 8:30 in the morning, and we are supposed to have a finished playground at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mr. Johnson and I and several others.
It goes till 5. I'm just going to say that right now, that you're not going to get out of there by 3. But your segment may be done early, and then you can go and they put it together. But it took until 5:30 till they...
It did, yeah. But you get a T-shirt.
Yeah.
And again, just highlighting the fact that Build Day September 9th, it would be amazing if you all could participate. Number one, because it gives you a chance to be out there with our families and our volunteers. But number two, what it does for the heart just can't be beat. And again, our partners are Disney and Pixar, as well as the Housing Authority Foundation. If you want to know how much fun you have, look at these awesome pictures. And oh my gosh, who's that amazing person on the right-hand side down at the bottom building a park in East Oakland? It can be done. So if I can do it, you can do it.
And if you do want to volunteer, there's roles for everyone. You don't necessarily need to put together a playground. It's helping with lunch. It's helping to direct people. There's lots of different roles and opportunities.
Thank you.
There is, yeah.
Great.
8:30. We'll send out, as soon as the dates have been established, we'll be sending out. You'll see probably too much notification and reminders to come out and play.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's cool. That's really cool. I love these kinds of things.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, so we're going to, I believe we now go on to item F.
Yeah, item F is consideration of a resolution authorizing the executive director to continue the authority's participation in the Employment Risk Management Agency, or IRMA, insurance pool, and to issue payment for the annual premium. This is an annual item, and we're here if you have any questions.
I just have a clarification. I didn't understand when it says over last year's premiums due to the loss experience for our IRMA members.
And
I just needed to understand what that.
We're being joined by Artesia Dupree, our risk manager, who can explain IRMA's loss. It's not necessarily OHA's loss that's driving the increase.
Good evening, commissioners. To explain that IRMA is a pool, and we share everything. So whenever there's a gain or there's a loss, it's spread throughout the pool. So even though Oakland Housing Authority didn't experience a great loss during that the policy period, the pool as a whole experienced a loss. And those losses were for discrimination cases that were paid out that were not ours for Oakland Housing Authority, but as the pool in general. So we share that. So, I mean, it is a win-win to some extent. When we gain, we all gain. We actually were able to receive a dividend this year of $42,000, and that's because of the decrease in Oakland Housing Authority's losses on the employment side of the risk management. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Just a question following what you just said. Are those housing authorities that have greater losses, do they go through some kind of retraining process so that the overall risk to the whole group is lessened?
That is correct.
And IRMA is more than housing authorities.
Yeah, it's more than housing authorities because there are other municipalities, city agencies, there are some county agencies, fire departments, police department. So it's not just housing authorities. It encompasses a lot. But whenever there's a loss experience, they actually do go on a rating system, and there are like five particular criteria that they have to meet in order to, number one, stay in the pool and to decrease their losses, such as going through the AB 1825, which is the discrimination, prevention of sexual harassment, discrimination. They actually have to go through a reporting module that they have to make sure that they're reporting in a timely manner, and they have to go through risk avoidance. So that's looking at the overall incident that they had to pay on and why, and is there something that the agency could have done differently that would have mitigated the loss. So they do actually have to meet some specific benchmarks during that period of policy period so that they don't continue to have those kind of losses. So yeah, so we as a pool actually get, the board gets to look and review those and see if there's other areas that we need to focus on in order for those losses not to be derived from them. The authority, housing authority, also has to look at those and make sure that we mirror so we don't get in the same pitfalls that would have caused the loss to begin with.
Great. Thank you for your answer.
You just explained that so wonderful.
Good.
I'm so glad we
Glad to see you back.
Thank you. Wonderful.
We have a motion.
I'll move the item.
Yes, we do. We have a second.
Yes, I second.
Okay, we have second. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? We are going to be insured against risk for another year.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good night.
All right, so now we have written communications.
I'll just walk through that, and then we can take any comments and suggestions. We have the monthly report, which is always included. In terms of other written communications, I just want to walk through a couple of these, so then we can come back to the report. First is just a joint letter that was written by the three main industry groups related to some impacts. I just kind of wanted to make you aware of what they're looking for, asking for with the new administration. And it's followed by another letter, which is, I had mentioned a couple of meetings ago that I was joining a group in Denver to talk about how you could convert the public housing program. This is the working document from that group.
Okay.
And so I just wanted to include it in a packet so you could see. This, I think it's an interesting approach. It's not budget neutral. What it's really asking for is the public housing program to be funded at the Section 8 level.
Okay.
And given who's on here and their access, it's going to be an interesting conversation. I was, I did attend the CLOFA meeting and the education meeting. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. It's been a long week. But the week before last, and it was an interesting thing. We were invited to the education summit, which was quite interesting. But at the meeting, I was able to talk to actually the special policy advisor to Dr. Carson, Secretary Carson. And this is presented, and I have extended an invitation both to him to come out, and he's very interested in doing that and talking about how we view public housing.
Yes.
And my view in general of public housing is I totally believe in social housing if the federal government is willing to step up to the plate and fund it correctly.
Amen.
I think it's the cheapest and best way. They're not interested in that.
Okay.
They are interested in different levels of privatization. Okay. And what I really want to show him is what we've done with Mandela and Lion Creek Crossing and a Hope 6 model and explain that that could continue with some changes.
Okay.
So that's one benefit. We're also able to talk to the man who is actually the financial policy advisor to the vice president. He made a very interesting case. And I really, if his talking points were more in the press, I think people would have a different view. Now, there are places where I had a disconnect, I will admit. But I also invited him out. Because I think that if you're going to have policies around what we do, you should understand the diversity of who we are.
Yes.
I don't want California ignored. My point with him is that he pointed out that there were about 74, 78 counties in America that had recovered from the recession out of the 3,200 counties in America. In other words, the recovery is left behind
most of the country. My questions with him were, how many of those counties are in California, which he didn't know. I did point out that 40% of the gross national product is part of California and asked him if he's aware. He said he's very much aware, and they realize that the only recovery in the person driving the economic engine of America is the state of California. And my favorite thing to point out about that is that if you take the poverty rate and you adjust it for cost of living in California, the most of which is housing, we have the highest poverty rate in the country.
Yes, we do.
And that he needs to pay very close attention to the golden goose that is funding their efforts in D.C.
Yes.
Because it can go south very, very quickly.
Yes.
And we now are in a more cyclical market than we've ever been, and where it's going to go, I don't know. But it was an interesting conversation. I also brought up our statewide initiative for creating a statewide designation for all the housing authorities in California, okay. Which he wasn't necessarily opposed to, I didn't feel. It's a budget neutral for appropriations. Rick Gentry in San Diego quickly followed me up as the only other person who got to ask him any questions and brought up that they totally support it. And he was interested because he, in his comments to me, brought up San Diego because they're a Republican mayor. So it really does drive their thinking, I think, in unhealthy ways. I'm so sick of the politics and the division. But I do think that we need to be at least an example of what is possible and talk about what our real challenges are. So this is a step.
Thank you.
As you can see, we're with some pretty conservative people on that list. And we are probably the most progressive jurisdiction, and we see this the same way. And the reason, of course, we want the fully funding of our public housing program through the Section 8 fair market rent standard is we can take care of the properties and the families so much better. Healthier outcomes, healthier lifetime outcomes can go with that. I also just took some briefings from the current House appropriations bill, which isn't passed, but I thought if you have time to read it, I do want to let you know there is currently language in it that we all actively try and get out, which allows more discretion for the secretary to violate our contracts and take some of our money back. So the HUD, the HAP money, reconcile those differently. I understand why they want to do it, but the stable funding really matters. And it's a violation of our current contract, which, of course, if the Congress passes it, they can do. But right now, the secretary doesn't have that power. So we'll be working through our channels to make sure that people understand why we're opposed to that and that we're opposed to inserting that language. Okay. I would say that the MTW program in general is supported by both sides of the aisle at this point.
Okay.
And I think there will be moves to make everybody MTW.
Right.
And in the coming years, no matter who's in at 1600 Pennsylvania.
Awesome.
So it's important, I think, we be open to that as we go forward and not just close the door. I don't want to behave like I won't talk to people because I disagree on one issue, and I think we have, and particularly representing all of my residents, I need to make sure we are at the table as much as we can. So that's my effort, and I just want to thank you. I told you before I went to Denver I wasn't sure about it, and I went there knowing that you were okay with it, and it made me a little better for being there, and I behaved. National Night Out. I just wanted to share National Night Out and the map. The map is available online and will be updated, and I'll send that out via email as well as we get closer, if you're able to stop by. But I always encourage people to go to your own National Night Out and get to know your neighbors. And we'll be joined by a great effort from resident, family and community partnerships, and particularly our police department and McGruff. I'm sure McGruff's going to be out again in the vans and stuff. So it's terrific. If you can swing by a site, that's great. I would really recommend you swing by one of the large sites that are on the map, and Peralta being, I think, one of the great ones, if you can do it. And that concludes my written materials.
Two questions.
Excellent. Yes, go right ahead.
Director, thank you for sharing these documents. I'm particularly glad that someone pointed out that if people from who have the homes and the mortgage interest, a reduction, that we actually imposed the smoke-free housing on them, what would it look like? I really love that you made that comparison. I think that was brilliant.
Yes.
I also, as always, there's no way for us to fully appreciate all the work that this agency does for our people. Mm-hmm. So I read all the incredible work that we do for our children. The summer program looks like amazing. Yes. Yes. And I just want you to know that I'm sure I'm speaking for all of us that we see the impact that we have on the lives of our people and our residents. And there's so much that I would love to lift up, but I particularly love the resident opportunity and self-sufficiency piece where the kids were engaged in social media, urban garden, and songwriting and guitar. And those are things that the schools can no longer provide for our kids. Yes. And so for us to fill that gap and give those babies, those children, that precious opportunity to be artists and musicians and is just amazing. And so I love everything, but I particularly love this. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Thank you for the written reports and the summary of the housing appropriations. I'm trying to understand on page 2 of that housing appropriations summary, that first paragraph that's highlighted, what it means. If you could explain that about the moving to work agencies and the offsetting the HAP reserves for housing choice vouchers?
Offsetting the HAP reserves means that if we have reserves that are now HUD held, the secretary has jurisdiction based on this language to take those and reallocate them to other agencies that may have shortfalls.
Okay.
And that's dangerous because we need our reserves and we commit them for a development project.
Right.
What will go on during this process, if it were to stay, is we will submit our obligation, what we've got obligated of our reserves, and that they will have to honor in general. With the current administration, who knows what they'll do, but really it means that if there's unobligated reserves, things that are HAP money at the end of either every month or a period, they could come in and take them. I would tell you that I did have a conversation with one of our neighboring agencies in, I won't say which one, but who has works very closely with their city and state who have paid people in Washington who can get to people. And it looks like this is not going to necessarily be on the table. She also met with someone from the appropriation staff who we know. And he also confirmed that it probably isn't going to be anything this year, that this may be kicked down the road for a year or two. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as nervous about that, but it's still there, and I just wanted you to be aware it's there. It's in the mix. Mm-hmm. It's a way they can take funding that is reserved for our development pipelines or that we want to use for police and move it to someone else.
Okay. That's a big issue.
Yeah.
I also really want to congratulate the FSS department or the Family Initiatives department for the wonderful achievement of seeing 17 of the residents hired recently. That's really wonderful. So thanks for all your work with the residents. I do have a question about the number of residents we have who are carpenters and other craftspeople or tradespeople, and just wondering why in a time when there's a great deal of construction going on and a lot of contractors are busy, are there things that can be done to help some of these residents get into more of those construction jobs?
And it's a very good question in light of also the Oakland Hire initiatives with some of the city funding. But beyond that, just the amount of construction going on, you're wondering why there still are residents sitting in the hiring halls. Lenita Wheeler is not here tonight, but Don Pipkins has stepped to the mic to give us a brief explanation of maybe what's going on with our 20 or so apprentices.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'm Don Pipkins, Family Community Partnership Manager. From what I'm noticing from compiling the monthly reports and our compliance requests that are going back to CCGS is that we don't have enough of skilled craftsmen that they're looking for to fill these positions. And what I would like to see is that we can kind of put our laborers and people that are going through training through Cypress Mandela training into a more kind of skilled training so that they can be ready for these opportunities that come up. What we see a lot of, what I'm noticing on the compliance requests are glaziers, or yeah. maybe a journeyman sheet metal worker, and we just don't have the ability, or our people that have gone through training don't have that skill. So that is something that I am discussing with Ms. Willer, our department director, to see about how we can, you know, cater those trainings so that we can get more of our OHA residents into those positions.
But beyond that, I think we need to look at what you're saying, because even if you have laborers, there's so many construction sites going on. Yes. We have more cranes going on in Oakland than we have yes. in anyone's memory. And so I think part of it is even at the union hall level of why aren't they referring our people who are already in the union to those jobs.
And I do thank you for your explanation. That's really helpful that you're looking at it. I noticed that there are 8 carpenters, and hopefully, you know, I think carpenter is one of the broadest areas that people can mm-hmm. get hired in. So again, is there something that's an obstacle, whether it's union dues or whatever it is?
Have to get more feedback and get, you know, come back to you with that answer. I know that through our department we do support our craftspersons with union dues or work boots, tools, licenses, and things of that sort. So I would have to get back with you with the exact reason.
Okay, thank you.
And the other challenge, and we can find out for you, is whether or not, because these are market rate construction sites, the
because
contractors market rate, they have no requirements for local hire, and they usually bring their crews with them, and often not from Oakland. So we can that's where it's worth the dig, even at the union hiring hall, to ask them what's going on. And we have a good enough relationship, I think, with building and trades to ask the questions and see what their responses are and get back to you. But thank you for raising it.
No, I also think that that's a really good question, because I know that I have been told by more than one person that the market, that the labor market is now so tight, people can't find the workers. And that basically, if you have a tool belt and you can snap it on and do anything, you're hired. I mean, people want you on the job. It's that strong right now. And if you're trying to hire a contractor, unless you have connections into that world, it's like good luck. You want to do a remodel on your house. If you don't have some sort of relationship going on, you just aren't going to be able to get it done because everybody's too busy. They can't schedule you in.
And
so that's a real good point you're
and
raising.
I think that's driving the costs for what we see in our development deals, what we've been
talking
about.
Oh, it's totally driving the costs out of sight.
We're at a period where you don't want to bid construction work right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah.
But we'll get back to you, because I think it's worth looking into it and taking kind of a different conversation with building and trades and see what's really going on and where they're at. Because carpenters are the number second, the actual easiest one to get placed usually are laborers, general laborers. Right. Carpenters are a little more skilled, and they have different apprenticeship levels that it could be we're not matching, but I would ask why. Are the halls empty or are they full?
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm. Yeah.
Can I just do some closing comments?
All right.
Bear with me.
What was that?
Bear with me. So, most importantly, I just want to say that I really appreciate reading through this report. I'm just moved to tears sometimes. So how much we do for our families and staff, I thank you. Just want to make a couple points. The PAC program used to be called Moms. Oh, my God. I was so pleased to read about this. What's our total count in PAC?
There's 21 units. One is off the rent roll, I believe, for offices, and we're trying to get to 100%. I'm not sure what our current occupancy is. I do believe we've had our first male member, though, move on site, right?
Yes.
And we are planning also, so you know, to have a grand opening sort of thing. I'm not sure what it's going to look like, but we're going to have something. And we've been coordinating with the sheriff, who will be there, and we'll be inviting the supervisor and the mayor and the council members, if they want to attend, just to really help lift the program up and give our electeds some credit for helping us get through this, and particularly Sheriff Ahern, who has stood by this program with us since 2000.
Yes. Thank you. A couple more things. Plan. Parent Leadership Action Network. That's the other thing I was pleased to read about. Thank you for that, too. The other one, 53 residents received individual assistance with more, one or more of the following. So it's stuff like that to just, I'm so glad I'm sitting in this seat, you know, that I can see that we are really making a difference. Thank you. A couple more things. The 94th International Apartments, oh my God, yay, that's open. People are now going to be getting vouchers because of that?
The application, yes, they're open the wait list.
Okay.
It hasn't opened yet, still under construction.
Okay.
But the wait list has opened, so people should apply now.
All right. And the Prosperity Place, attain the Platinum Green Point rating of 232. Didn't quite understand what that meant.
There's a Green Point rating system, and I don't know if, I don't see Phil, but maybe, oh, there you are.
It's kind of equivalent to LEED Platinum.
What he's LEED. Saying is that it is similar to the LEED system, but less expensive, if I am okay. Right. LEEDs can cost a lot of money for development, but it does the same kind of certification for less.
Okay, I think that's pretty much it. So again, thank you. I look forward to reading this report and staff. Oh, I so appreciate you all for all you do for our families. It's just such a blessing, Director. Thank you, and I'm just so grateful just to be sitting in this seat. But thank you. I read all this, and I'm just so, it just blesses me. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all. So we're moving on to my comments. I have just a couple.
Oh, okay, good.
One is just to update you on our Learn and Earn the Summer Employment Program. We have referred 252 Oakland youth to the program, so it looks like we're in full enrollment.
Awesome.
And I just want to congratulate FCP for facilitating that. I know it's a challenge every year to get it all moved to the city, and it looks like we're there. We also, you know, as you saw in the report, have 9-week summer youth lunch programs. Please let anyone know. It's in the report where we're doing it. In June, it was 278 youth ate lunch, which
that.
I think is pretty great.
Yes,
a couple of nuts and bolts things. Our total portability, we have 31 participant households ported in from other jurisdictions this month. We're still seeing more come in that leave, and I want you to be aware of that. We only have 16 unabsorbed vouchers now in other jurisdictions. Everybody's absorbed, but I understand that the county has quit absorbing now, so they've met their lease up, so we're kind of not absorbing. In terms of our project-based initiative for in-place families, we have 20 projects that received a conditional award, and we're moving ahead with that amount. One of the things that took some time is they had to get environmental reviews. So if you're wondering where the lag time of that lease up it is, we had to go back and get new categorically exempt for all the projects before that's in place. We're getting very, very close to the SRO operating agreements, but they're just humps. But we're getting close. We had, I think, our final meeting this afternoon with Jennifer, actually, on the phone, just going through the final agreement. Our partners have looked at it. They provided input. Now we're doing the final tweaks. We want it to operate similar in its effect as a project-based Section 8 agreement that will allow those SROs to go to the bank and actually get lending against it. So we pulled the agreement back, and Jennifer's retweaked it so that it could hopefully meet that goal. Certainly, if it does, I'll be thrilled, and I've offered to meet or call any of the bankers who don't understand the agreement if they would like to, you know, meet and talk about it, just to help support. We know most of the bankers, but I'm hoping they do. The Shelter Plus Care conversion is, again, I think, part of a godsend in terms of unleashing the existing structures to serve people who are in need of services-enriched housing. And they've invited 55 this month in. So they're moving forward. It's not an easy thing, but they finally got over 30, about 35 families who have converted onto regular Section 8. And we're hoping to move through that allocation that we have. A couple other updates. Lion Creek Crossing Phase 4 had, if you can recall, way back when, got transit-oriented development funds. And we had to change Lion Creek Crossing 5 and build 125 units because the city was going to in the BART parking lot by the Coliseum and did not get it built. And we would have lost that money, and the city would have lost another $8 million of infrastructure funds for the streets. So we built the units, and we stayed compliant, and the state has finally paid the city, and the city has finally paid us nearly $4 million, 3.862, which is, I just wanted to close that loop and let you know that we did get the money, and I want to thank Real Estate Development and Phil for just staying on that over the years. If you don't stay on it, it tends to never happen, and certainly Steve Hoppe, I think, was, until he left last December, on it every month, and it's resulted in us getting paid. And I mentioned that I went to the CLAFA Education Summit, and I wanted just to mention to you, so you're aware of it, that Senator Pat Murray, who's a Democrat from Washington State, has introduced a bill called AHEAD, Affordable Housing for Education Achievement Demonstration Act. Well, I'm kind of excited about that piece of legislation, should it proceed, is it will give funding for housing authorities and districts to work together and help fund some of our efforts that we're already doing. I just think it's way overdue, and I'm really thrilled it's out there, so I wanted to mention so you're aware. Senator Murray, she's a ranking member of the Senate Health, Education, and Labor Committee, so hopefully it will stay in once the Senate gets to their bill. And that's all my announcements.
Excellent.
Is one question. Rent increase is denied. 7 in June, 120. What is that process?
And I will invite our Director of Leased Housing, Michelle Hassan, to talk about our rent increase and the process and what could drive the numbers and some of the denials. We don't deny many, but we do some. I'm not sure what this number's about.
Michelle Hassan, Director of Leased Housing, Commissioners. To answer your question, you'll see that the number tripled in a month, went from 394 to 912. So the denials could be for a couple of reasons. The owners don't complete the paperwork after maybe two or three requests that they update the documents. Many times we find they don't provide the correct service to the tenant. They are required to serve the tenant the notice and provide us a copy prior to submitting it to us for the increase. Those would be the two areas that I would say would be the reason why the requests are denied. Okay. And then, of course, if the request that the owner is asking for is not reasonable and we're not able to negotiate with them, the request would ultimately be denied.
Okay. That was a very high number, too, that month.
Yes.
A request.
Yeah.
912 right. is about our 1,000, I think, was our all-time high in January.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for answering that.
Okay, so now we move on to reports of commission committees. I don't believe we had any committees meeting.
No.
Do we have any announcements by commissioners?
I just have a closing comment, if I may. And I'll try not to get too emotional here, but I want to thank the director, Trisha, and Commissioner Lee. We went to Indianapolis, and I suffered a seizure, and I fell out. I don't know what happened, but our deputy was right there by us. Commissioner Lee was there. 2 days I was in the hospital. It was just such a blessing that staff commissioner was right there with me, and my daughter was contacted. Thank you very much. She's very grateful for seeing the display of commitment to a commissioner, a resident commissioner. But I'm getting better. I've contacted my medical care person, and I'll be working with them. Like, again, just trying to understand what the seizure process is all about. But you fall out, you don't know what happened, you're just out, and someone comes to your aid. It was truly a blessing for me. So I want to let the agency know. Ms. Wells, thank you. And Commissioner Lee, thank you. And Director, thank you. So, thank you. I'm so glad to be working for this agency. Thank you so much. Thank you.
I just want to say that we are so glad that you're okay and that you were able to come to the meeting tonight, and so grateful for the family that we are that takes care of each other. I'm very grateful. I went to a meeting right before here at the city concerning the homelessness crisis in the city,
And I know that we're in the business of preventing homelessness. I don't know. We don't have the resources to solve it, but I just wanted to let you know that we have approximately 200 encampments in the city of Oakland. That's one of the counts. I think it's a lot more than that. They stretch from one end of the city to the other, and I know that people see them. One of the this particular group is the Homeless Task Group that is led by James Vaughn of EPHO. He's a really good homeless advocate. And we are attempting to have the city declare a state of emergency. And there will be a work plan behind the state of emergency, which hopefully will include allowing public property, if I'm not mistaken, to be used for perhaps tiny homes or alternative kind of types of housing. And maybe they didn't use the word legalized encampments, but I really think that that could be one of the things that we could do. So it's a big, huge problem. And I know that several of our commissioners are also engaged in attempting to solve it on many tables. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Oh, I would just mention, you know, speaking of tiny homes, somehow through serendipity, I was with some guy from Google on Friday night, and he was talking about, he actually wants to set up a meeting with me and this other person from Google. I guess Google is doing some really good stuff. And this guy has put together a tiny home program, so they're making these homes for $60,000 or 300 square feet. And so they're working with zoning commissions and stuff, and the idea is you drop them in somebody's backyard, right? And then there's a stipulation that for a certain number of years, the house has to be rented to someone in need, you know? And there's, you know, specific guidelines as to what that is. And then after that, it doesn't cost the homeowner anything, and then the homeowner gets to keep the tiny house after the contract expires. And that's really all I know about it. All I know is I'm gonna be meeting with these Google people. So, you know, I'll let you know what's popping up out of this. If there's anything that, I don't know if we have an interest in this or not. But anyway, you just mentioned tiny homes. And yeah. So I like that triggered my mind. And so I just thought I would let you know that there are forces in the world that are moving forward on tiny homes. Okay, so I guess we're now looking to adjourn to closed session.
Just real quickly before we adjourn, I don't know. Ashore, our new IT director, has joined us, and I think this is his second meeting, actually, right? And I don't know if I introduced you last time, but just so you can put a name to a face. He's joined us, and he's going to help us go to the next level with IT and welcome him aboard.
And what exactly is that next level?
We'll figure that out later.
Okay.
That's where I went. Thank you.
I'll second that motion.
All right.
To adjourn.
We are hereby adjourned to closed session.